You already love the Mixing Music podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today. Back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, long time no see, Lube.
What up, everybody?
It's been a while. Yes, happy new year to you and to all the listeners. This is the first episode we've recorded since I've been back, which is good that we're back here.
How's the return from Japan? How are you calibrating?
You know what? It's warmer in LA. I like that. Lots of people say they like seasons. I don't. I want it to be summer always.
that's hilarious, actually. Four seasons? Yeah. How about now?
Yeah. I love change. The weather is not one of those things that I want to change. That being said, it's been good to be back. Jet lag got over quickly. I think I've had two back-to-back colds.
Oh, okay.
I had a little bit of a cold when I was coming here, and then I got another cold like immediately.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to have the cat back again. I missed my cat. It makes me wonder. There is one thing that I wonder about every time, and this is like the culture shock thing, that every time I come back, it's like, at Costco, there's like, or like at different shopping malls, like electric vehicles only, and you see like regular cars parked there. Or like at IKEA, it's like cars with families with young children, and like you see regular couples and old couples come out. It's less like, as a Japanese dude, especially coming back from Japan,
yeah,
it's like, what's the point of rules if nobody's going to follow them? That's like what I think.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? Like, I totally understand that it's like, it's in America, you don't make rules unless you enforce them. If you can't enforce them, then there's no point of them. But then also, I don't know. That's the hard part about being Japanese is America, in America is,
fast people, and loose.
Yeah, it's loose. But there's also good things about that too. Like if you are every once in a while part of an exception group.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I'm trying to send a letter through the post office, but my like postcard is not in a traditional size, then they'll be like, whatever, you could just send it in this size and they'll just like pick it. But in Japan, they'll like go through the manual and like take an hour to figure out what is the correct price to send this postcard, because they can't just like improv anything.
Yeah.
Right. So there's like a tedious, annoying parts of that too. But
I imagine that makes things also just a lot more efficient. Yeah.
I will say that during times of peace, it's like there's no litter. It's clean, very few homeless. Everybody's working hard. Everybody's very honest. During times of war, war crimes, you know, like.
Okay. Yeah.
There is a comedian. Okay, sorry. Mm-hmm. Hold on. We will get into this episode. There's a comedian a Japanese comedian that I heard the other day. I'm going to butcher this joke, but it's like a totally Japanese dude with the full Japanese accent. I think he was on Kill Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, in World War II, Japan committed war crimes. So I understand the first bomb, but the second bomb, too much, you know? but then I put a hot pocket in the microwave and I heated it up and then I pulled it out and then it was still a little cold in the center. I said, oh no, why is the center still not surrendering? And so I nuked it again.
Japan the hot pocket?
Yeah. That's so good.
That's horrible. But yeah, it's also that's actually... really, that's a fun way to look at it. That's Yeah. I don't know if I could ever openly say that out loud and not be taken as an insult. Like, oh, right, Japan, the two? Yeah, Hot Pocket.
There is a... we did record an episode with a guest in Shibuya. Like, mm-hmm. we recorded it in, like, downtown Tokyo, Shibuya, which is cool. So we'll release that in a couple weeks, but...
Nice.
Cool. I actually think it's a really good episode. But today's episode... is actually a topic request from one of our Discord users.
Mm-hmm.
It goes by the name Joe McGill. Hi, Joe. He says, hi, DK and Lou. I have an idea for a topic for a podcast episode. Have you ever done an episode exploring the use/abuse of substances while mixing? I'd really love to hear your thoughts. Like, when mixing, should your brain be clear of all chemicals? Is a strong coffee needed? What about a joint or microdosing, a glass of red wine or a scotch? Somewhere I came across the quote, create high, record sober. And I've wondered how that would apply to mixing. I've also heard that substances can affect your hearing. For instance, apparently cocaine decreases your ability to hear high-end, which is why there's an Oasis record that is mixed with a lot of high-end. Because I know I was doing a lot of drugs at the time. Anyways, thought it might be a good topic to explore on the pod because it's not something talked about publicly and you both always have such good insights. Well, thank you, Joe. We appreciate you requesting this topic that we've never talked about before. I don't think ever in the history of the podcast.
No.
I don't think I would have ever come up with the topic because I'm going to start out with a personal bias of mine. I have not always been... but I am almost all the time completely straight edge sober of near everything except caffeine, coffee. And even coffee, caffeine is one cup a day, a very moderate level, never after like 2 or 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like what you're not... A piece of advice that no one will ever get to me because of my current biases is to rely on any substances for productivity ever.
Yeah.
And that includes an over-reliance on things of moderate, like even like things like Tylenol, you know, and caffeine. An over-reliance on even useful things can be bad. But again... That is, so I will start off with this very broad bias that I have. I do have some studies that I've pulled up that were surprising, actually. And then me and Lou will kind of give a couple of insights based on local anecdotal availability heuristic kind of answers, like what we perceive it based on the people around us, which doesn't fully function as a survey because the sample size is just like what we've seen in our personal projections, you know, but like we could talk about that too. We could talk about personal experiences. Lou, you said something before we started recording that was pretty normal.
Yeah. I feel that? Like, so my experience with things is I'll smoke occasionally, but it's a very free of responsibility kind of moment that has to be taken on. And you have to kind of call that one for yourself. And you got to try to hold yourself as good as you can on that. Because I've seen people light up in the most stupid situations. So a good example of this would be like, listen, if you're like last week, was it? Or 2 weeks ago, I forget when, I spent like 3 days at Pulse Music Group in their Studio A doing a live album recording or EP, whatever the length is to qualify as which. Everybody in the group smokes weed, and that's totally cool, but not a single person lit up until the job was done, which means on day three. Like nobody was lighting up during the sessions to record, thinking it would make them a better musician or anything like that. There's a sense of responsibility that you need to have with it. So whatever we talk about today, do not take it as like, hey, there's, because I pulled up quotes from different groups because I know that this topic has been brought up in different magazines, artists, producers, engineers. But I brought up some old vintage artists to modern artists who do talk about their process with it. But my experience with it is like, listen, man, I can't function with it. I don't know how some people do. And unless you know that you can function with it, this shouldn't really be a topic. Like, right. You should be taking this at night if you really want to. I think for me, it personally helps me sleep. It helps me just kind of relax at the end of the night. And then I knock out in like 10 minutes. Like, that's weed for me. But jumping into things, there are people who have actually, they've quoted their success to being as a part of the substance, you know. But a lot of these groups that you'll hear, it kind of makes sense when you hear them, but it's, like I said, it's case by case. Some people can function with it. Some people can't. You got to discover that for yourself if you're already there. If you're thinking, maybe I should try drugs to figure it out, maybe you should not. Because if you haven't needed them now, then you don't need them tomorrow. I promise you that much.
So, that's a really good point. If you've never needed them now, you're not going to need them in the future. I know that it's kind of annoying that I bring it up all the time, but the reason why I bring it up all the time and the reason why I think I like to compare to like ideologies, philosophies of Japan as a culture is because, for example, there is an undeniable large culture, especially back in the day, of hallucinogenics or drugs to induce creativity and creative writing. Right? The reason why I bring up Japanese culture all the time is like Japan is, I think, equally known for creative movies, creative music, creative writing with none of the drugs. So drugs are, even severe alcohol usage, highly, highly constantly policed. People get thrown in jail even under suspicion. Again, it's not America, so you're guilty until proven innocent, right? So even if they smell weed smoke, people are getting arrested and being thrown in jail without a drug test. So it just doesn't happen. There is no drug culture. Like, think about it. Every single Miyazaki film was probably conceived and drawn and written sober, completely sober. Every crazy Vocaloid J-pop song that you've ever heard, that's insane. Every single jazz fusion record that you've heard from Japan, which are notoriously some of the best around, right? Completely written while sober. And the reason why I bring this up is so another thing that I want to distinguish at the beginning of the episode here is this is not, I'm not going to talk about this from a moral framework, right? I know there's a lot of like religious people who it's like, it's against the commandments, right? To do drugs or to overindulge in these mind altering things, right? Whether you're Catholic or Buddhist or Muslim, right? It doesn't, like, most religions are substance abuse is bad ever, like, right? And mind altering substances are bad. I'm not going to judge anything based on morals. On a personal level, when it comes to the lines of my morals, I think moderation and how it affects others is the most important thing. For example, moderate use of alcohol is probably not immoral, but if it leads you to spend money that you keep secret from your wife, you know, if it leads you from abusing your family or neglecting your family, even a little bit, even in small proportions, if you cannot functionally cope without it, or if you feel like you can't, that's bad. And that's where I draw the lines of my morality. It's not about instinctively weed is bad for you or drugs are bad for you from a moral level without even any sort of... I will say that most illegal drugs, the moderation should be zero, right? Like, you should take Fent zero times, right?
Yeah.
But things that are legal, it's like moderation is the key word here. Okay, so on that note, so we're not going to use morality. We're just going to use like philosophy and logic here.
Yeah. Want to go in with some historical look backs at some people who have credited to part of their process?
Yes, let's talk about this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before you do, I was going to say, when I was talking about the Japanese example, and the reason why I was bringing that up is because to me, doing drugs, because there are a lot of stories like we're about to share with drugs in the studio and drugs in the writing process that don't exist at all, right? In another country, in another culture. So that says to me that yes, it has helped people in the past, but I'm not convinced it's the drugs. I'm more convinced that people think it's the drugs. Like, it's the illusion of control yeah. that we've talked about in the past. And, like, they had one good song that happened under the influence once, and now they're chained to the concept that they can't write another song without the drugs. It's the illusion of control, yeah. this need for anchoring in a world of ambiguity that we've talked about before, a common form of cognitive bias.
I think that's kind of what some people seek from the use of it, which I can understand. Kind of like I said, for me, at the end of the night before I go to sleep, just kind of helps me let go a bit. And I think for some people, they want to let go of that sense of like constantly judging themselves and whatever. And if that's what they're after, great. But doing that too much and relying on that to feel that way or to be able to get into that mindset is not actually helpful, because you never really learn to be open and creative on your own if you think that the only time you can be is when you're on drugs. It's a right. hindrance on the long term.
Right. Okay. Even with something pretty pretty minimal and moral and unrelated as like using, like I have a bunch of buddies that use weed, whether edible form or smoking form, to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's not getting in the way of other people. I don't think it's immoral. It's as long as it's legal in the state, right?
Yeah.
There is still, even if it's at moderate levels, to do that occasionally is fine. I do think that I have something that, like, within me, within my brain, within my personal philosophy, that says, like, yes, it's a safe thing and you become reliant on it, just like I like caffeine in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But if it gets to the point where, like, I can't sleep without weed,
then that's right? a problem.
Right. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And here's the problem too with addiction, as well as an over-reliance and a lack of moderation, is that most people who genuinely can't stop, like, for example, can't stop, like, really think that they need to smoke weed to sleep, genuinely from the bottom of their heart, intelligent, self-aware people really do think that they can stop anytime.
Yeah.
So they think they're practicing moderation, but in actuality, it's addiction, right?
Yeah.
And that, 'cause that's how that works. And that's how even more, yeah, personality, like maladaptive coping mechanisms, mm-hmm. that's how they start. It's like people, it's in the blind spot of your awareness. Like, you genuinely think you're in control, and that's why it goes out of control.
Yeah, just anyway. Remember, like, for every artist that says they have a good handle on it, there's also another artist that has gone off the rails and is TMZ's bread and butter. You know what I mean? Like, I think one of the funniest ones to go with, and it's not a drug, it's not a substance of any sort. Everybody's had one. DK's probably had a few. And yet, somebody made the news just for eating too much of it, which is Hot Cheetos. If Hot Cheetos has a too much threshold, like, I don't know if you remember, is Xanax or Xanity, something Xan. Little Diego, the little kid, whatever, the trap artist that went to the hospital for, I guess he was throwing up because of eating too much Hot Cheetos. If too much Hot Cheetos can be a thing, then I'm sorry, my Latina sisters, but Cheetos can sometimes be the substance that you're overly taking, okay? If you're overly taking any drug, it will do much more harm to you than Hot Cheetos will in the long term. And it's just that. It's like DK said. It's, if you're relying on it, it's already a detriment.
Right.
Yeah.
This is, I think it's worth bringing up real quick. It's difficult and often incorrect to overgeneralize, but this is one of these personal philosophies that I have.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a truth that I believe in. This is a personal philosophy that I've developed, and I have. I have like two or three, and this is the first one, is that I genuinely, truly think and believe that true satisfaction in oneself and joy can only be generated through some form of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean an over struggle too much, right? But I think, like, I could eat more, but I'm not going to allow someone to enjoy their meal more.
Mm-hmm.
I think like I could stop now. I could stop lifting these weights now because my body hurts, but I'm going to push one more. These tickets to Disneyland hurt me because they're way more expensive than they usually are, but I'm going to sacrifice for it. And I'm going to pay for these Disneyland tickets. You're going to enjoy the trip more because they cost you more. This even goes down to like purchase buyer psychology where it's like, wow, this mixer charges a lot of money. It's going to cost me a lot. They're psychologically probably going to assume that you are actually higher quality than you are.
Now, right? This is let me throw a wrench into that one. But if you're on drugs while they hire you and pay you more money than they pay the next guy, it just dirties the mentality of it. Like, right. Come on.
So the point of me bringing this up is because I do think genuinely wanting to do drugs,
yeah,
but staying sober as a choice is a very strong and proven way that people can feel empowered for themselves, right? There's a reason why people brag about their sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're like, I'm 3 years sober. I'm 15 years sober.
Actually, there's an artist that I work with. Last time I talked to him, he told me it was 101 days sober. I was like, dude, fucking congrats. Like, I'm not saying I don't care to be or not to be, whatever, but the fact that he's very proud of that, I'm like, dude, I'm proud of you. Like, that actually gets me excited for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the exception to my philosophy is maladaptive coping mechanisms when you make life harder for yourself for zero reason, unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Right? Because you think God is watching you. You know, like that's a bad maladaptive coping mechanism that doesn't. But I'm talking about like regular moderate stuff. So like I genuinely don't believe making people's lives easier is going to make people happy. This goes into like my political beliefs as well. I'm very skeptical about that stuff. That doesn't mean that I'm not for better systems. I'm not for more efficiency. I'm not for, it means that we think about these things with nuance and carefully. Okay. So anyway, that's my personal philosophy going back to the drugs topic. Mm-hmm. So Lou, we don't even have to talk about specific examples. Like obviously in American music, creative culture, there's typically a lot of drugs involved. Within creative communities in America, there's always a lot of alcohol. And I think that's across the board, a lot of illicit drugs, a lot of weed, especially when it became legal. Mm-hmm. There's even like, cultures of specific drugs for specific groups, like EDM does one drug.
I will say, I wonder, I'm curious to look up this statistic. I can't English. I'm curious to look up the statistics of when weed became legal. I'm sure there was a boom in like music that heavily promoted like marijuana and things like that. Let's say like anything from like ska, reggae to whatever. Cool. But I wonder if it's lost its following a little bit because it's no longer considered as much taboo. And the reason I say that is because some music people will always revere as like, oh, of course it's associated to that. I mean, look, like for instance, like with reggae, you had Bob Marley. With jazz, you had Louis Armstrong. Even with rock, you had people like Korn who like heavily admitted to like just, yeah, we were high doing different things, trying different things. You know, it was a creative outlet for them. But like, I'm curious if the loss of the majority of its taboo at this point, you know, being legal for so long now, if the market of people looking for music that, you know, showcase it as the forefront of its aesthetic, has the listeners dropped off a little bit on that? You know, it's no longer as taboo. So it's not like, you know, people are playing that all the time. There's plenty of genres that showcase it even more now. Shit, you got weed and country music.
Right.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown score second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Assisted customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back in unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I want to also say, so we're going to get to some of the deeper questions here, and I'm going to pull up some of the studies that we read through, talk about some more topics here, especially the ones that Joe questioned, some of the questions Joe brought up.
No.
I'm going to start off with some empirical data.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is super interesting. Okay, so one thing I don't want to do is shame people who have said, for example, we love Greasy Will, who's famously like, I record better when I'm drunk as hell, right?
Yeah.
This is not, I'm not using these studies and this episode to say that I feel this is not a power complex. I'm not saying that I'm better than somebody else, a superiority complex. This is not a way to say that people that are sober are better than people that are not. These are objective data points with no feelings or intentions necessarily. On a philosophical level, I genuinely believe that if you love music and if you love your work, you are willing to do some difficult things in order to maximize your craft, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you truly love mixing, then responding to clients' emails is a non-negotiable that you'd be willing to do in order to be a better mixer.
Yeah.
Right. Or like going through the process of automating vocals, which is really tedious and annoying, can be tedious and annoying because that's how serious you take the craft. And then another thing that I would consider is like, okay, if someone loves drinking and it feels like it doesn't really take away from this, but some of the studies show that it's bad for you, I would consider like because I love my craft, I would consider stopping. Right.
Yeah.
It's not about morals. Don't confuse this with morals. This is about a love for the craft and passion. Okay. So number one, there are studies that are pretty comprehensive that shows substance misuse and hearing loss. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Studies suggest that chronic misuse of certain substances, including illegal drugs and alcohol, is associated with increased risk of hearing loss, especially at high frequencies that are crucial for mixing.
So
chronic. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I've mentioned this before, but let's say like with alcohol, even if you don't have hearing loss immediately, the first thing you could hear, let's say you went to a show or something or whatever, your ears are ringing, your blood pressure going up, like with alcohol or weed or anything like that, because that's what happens as part of it. It becomes a lot louder. Like, even if he had it mildly, you never heard it before, suddenly you start hearing it more, your blood pressure is going up. And one of the ways to try to get that to go away is to lower your blood pressure, which means lowering your alcohol consumption, any kind of other substances that can make it go up. So like even caffeine will be an agitator of that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like alcohol specifically, I've only drank and got drunk once in my life.
No, mix up masters.
I don't think this is related at all. This is totally just anecdotal, personal bias here. But like, if high-end loss is related to alcohol drinking to the level that it sounds like, there's a reason why I can hear significantly more high-end than average engineer my age. Like, that is without a doubt. Yeah, I still can hear like 17, 18K pretty clearly,
nice.
Which is fascinating. Okay, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make me a better mixer because I can hear higher frequencies. Anyway, so chronic alcohol misuse has been linked to high frequency sensory neural hearing loss and vestibular dysfunction. Wow, those are big words. Illegal drug users, especially those using multiple drugs, have higher odds of overall and high frequency hearing loss than non-users. Okay, that's interesting. So you're actually risking more hearing damage over time. That sounds like, I'm not going to go into the deeper end here, but that sounds like a longer term general hearing loss. I don't think we even need to talk about how that's bad for mixing. There's also an argument to be had that says you don't need to have your full hearing to be a good mixer. But like, if we're delivering packages by carriage, I'm not going to hire the guy that says who can drive the carriage closest to the edge of the cliff without falling off. I'm going to drive the guy that says I'm going to stand away as far as I can from the edge of the cliff.
I'm not going to lie. So in my, to get to my family's hometown in Mexico, when you're driving on the mountainsides of Mexico, if you've ever done this, you know what I'm talking about. But, those streets are so fucking narrow that there's occasional sections of it where if there's two cars coming from opposite directions, one of them has to choose to reverse. One of my uncles loves to fuck with us by driving close to the edge. And though that ride was free and everything, I would rather pay to never be close to that goddamn edge. Right. And I'm just saying, like, a lot of people just love just taking the risk of being like, it's okay if I'm just on the edge of, like, let's say hearing loss. Like, nah, bro. It's not worth it. I promise you.
And if we're going to go with this metaphor, it's crazy because the metaphor where it's false is that if you get close to the edge and you fall off, then you're dead.
Yeah,
but in real life, it's actually worse because you can never fully perceive where the edge is and you don't know when you fall off. And it takes a long time
before you realize it,
before it actually does some real damage. So it's almost worse than just dying immediately to a certain degree.
At least you died with your hearing.
Right. Okay. So number two is cannabis and auditory perception. Research on cannabis effects shows mixed results. It may change auditory processing and subjective music experience, but evidence on objective hearing ability is limited. So cannabis has less studies of less data on how it affects hearing over time compared to the previous bulletin, right? One study found that THC altered activation in auditory cortex regions during sound processing tasks. Other research suggested cannabis dampens neural response to music in reward and emotion centers, yet can increase subjective enjoyment and perceived sensitivity for some listeners. Self-reported surveys indicate many listeners feel heightened auditory sensitivity under cannabis, though this doesn't necessarily reflect actual listening skills.
Yeah.
However, other studies also show potential cognitive impairment with chronic cannabis use, including attention, memory, and executive function, which are critical skills for mixing. Cool. So it seems like there's less long-term hearing that studies that we found so far with THC usage, less long-term hearing loss because of THC. It seems like, you know how it's like people under the influence of marijuana, like everything starts to feel a little bit more novel, right?
Mm-hmm.
That it sounds like it can play a role in how one subjectively enjoys music, which is funny. THC has always been linked to enjoyment of music and stuff. I'm going to talk about anecdotal self-surveyed stories later, so we're going to move on for now. And more studies here. Number three is acute alcohol effects on auditory processing. Even moderate alcohol consumption can alter auditory discrimination, especially in complex listening situations. Alcohol ingestion has been shown to reduce performance on tasks like speech discrimination in noise and filtered listening tasks. This study suggests that in the short term, alcohol could diminish your ability to make precise mixed decisions, especially under difficult or detailed listening conditions. Number four, psychoactive drugs and perceptions. There are also substances with documented direct effects on auditory perception. Certain psychedelics, Have been reported to produce unusual auditory distortions. For example, pitch and harmonic perception changes, which would obviously distort mixing decisions. Alcohol and psychoactive drug intoxication can even produce auditory hallucinations, with particular in higher doses and or withdrawal states. Okay, very little to say about that. So there are some like talking points that we have. I think before we talk about some exceptions and examples from personal anecdotes, Lou, let's talk about just in general, mixing, unlike writing, mixing and mastering, even recording in the studio, studio work, typically demands high levels of focus and attention to detail, especially because in those situations, in the recording studio, typically the only sober person in the room is the engineer.
Yeah.
So not just as a personal philosophy, but it's also like a function. Like when there's a big group together and they're all partying in the back room as one of them is recording drunk, like someone needs to drive the ship. You know, drive the car. And that is the recording engineer typically, right? Even in mixing, that it does help to have a clear state of mind, to be very aware of your surroundings, to know what's going on. Right, I think that's pretty fair to say. Mixing demands clear perception, right? That being said, Lou and I, we both have a lot of anecdotal. Like, we know people that are much more successful than we are that are very reliant on drugs, legal and non-legal, that love alcohol, that love these sort of things, right? Lou, do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, sure. I will say that though I do not aspire to match, but I am rather always surprised by the amount that some of the people that I've worked with can smoke or do or whatever while on the job and maintain their focus and everything. I say this because ADHD is just thrown into overdrive when you have a substance involved. Like, if you want to talk about a really distracted squirrel, give a squirrel some weed. That shit's going to look for all the nuts in the world. It's going to have the munchies and everything, whatever. And my ass is already squirrel-like as it is. So when it comes to my work, I'm, you know, 99.9% of the time sober. There's the 0.1% chance that I'm not. And that's usually if it's like I said earlier in the episode, we did like 3 days at Pulse. On day three, at the end of it, we did a whole video shoot. Everything is going to be released with videos associated and all that kind of stuff. But after that, the artist is like, hey, do you guys just want to jam? And we just recorded like a whole like hour long jam session after everybody had a nice little smoke session. And that's cool. And the thing I could tell you on that one is, it did feel fun. I'm not going to lie. Like, you smoke a little bit, you go into the studio and you start like messing with EQs, compressors, all that kind of stuff. Cause you know, you're not doing any final takes anymore. You're just doing jams. So you just feel like grabbing a 2500 and slamming the shit out of it just to see how an analog one is going to affect the snare. And if maybe you want to do that later in the mix or whatever, that's cool. There is like a creative change, but audibly, I'm sorry, it just doesn't feel like I'm making better decisions or not, because I feel like I'm being very nitpicky of every little thing at that point, that I'm no longer making decisions that are for the greater good of the overall sound. I'm losing the forest for the trees at this point. You know, if you become hyper aware of every last little detail, you could argue that that's a good thing, but it could have been a non-issue the whole time. And then you look like some people's Pro Q3 or Pro Q4 EQ section where you got 1,000 points reduced and then you bypass it and it sounded better before.
Right.
You know, you could hyper-focus into the wrong thing depending what you're doing. One of the ones that I think I've enjoyed the most is like doing a microdose of shrooms, because with shrooms, my experience is that it actually helped me keep on focus. Now, a microdose to me, for those that know, it's like a 0.2, maybe a 0.3. I guess maybe because of my weight or whatever. I know some people that do less for a microdose. It just kind of helped me keep on pace. But when it came to hearing things differently, I don't think it actually changed anything hearing-wise, or at least that I would notice. But what I would notice is that I would listen to the record more, less specifically and more objectively. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know what? The drums just feel good, but I feel like that snare could just hit harder. And, you know, you just kind of lean into the creative side a little more. But it didn't make a difference in why I was choosing one set of EQs or another. You know what I mean? It didn't benefit me. It didn't change anything. It just was a different mindset. And I think that's what I'm trying to explain. Like, most times these things will change your mindset, but they won't improve it necessarily. They'll just change the way you see things. And for that reason, honestly speaking, I don't really have an experience where I can say like it actually helped. Anytime that I've actually ever like smoked while working, whether that be doing concerts, and one could argue, well, everybody in the crowd is high. Wouldn't you want to hear it the way a high person hears it? It's like, fuck no, I got critical decisions to make. If some shit goes wrong, I can't be high. If I'm in the studio and somebody mispatches something on accident, I can't be high for that. Now I got to figure out a fucking patch bay that doesn't belong to me. You know what I mean? Like, there's way too much risk involved to the point where the only thing it ever really does for me is make me feel paranoid when I'm actually doing a job. With right. that said, if I'm just at home listening to music and it's like some of my favorite records that I grew up around and things like that, sure, I can make the argument that it feels cool and it feels vibey, but you know why? Because I'm relaxed at that moment. I'm no longer listening critically. I'm no longer on the clock. And right. I think you could say the same if you were to just be relaxed. If you just had a good day, you went home, relaxed, sat down, listened to your favorite music on your favorite speakers, I'm sure you'd have the same enjoyment, just a different mindset.
Right.
Yeah.
So a couple thoughts as far as anecdotes go. One brief thought that I have before we do this. There's also probably going to be a lot of listeners or people that think about this that say, like, for example, I was diagnosed with ADHD since you brought that up. And so I take Adderall or some equivalent, right? And typically you get prescribed medication for something like that because the thing that you're going through is affecting your personal life, your family, like your ability to work, right? And so that you get prescribed drugs. If you have a moderate to low level of ADHD and you are smart enough to develop coping mechanisms, yeah, I'll keep the word smart there. I don't think that's the right word, but I think it's good enough for the situation. To develop coping mechanisms, then you probably don't need it. Like if it's not fully impacting your life in a completely hurtful way, right? But there's also times when people have it severely enough and they just haven't dedicated the time to develop coping mechanisms or don't have the awareness to develop coping mechanisms. Maybe drugs will help. The point is, I, as a podcast host, cannot tell you, the listener, who I have no idea who you are and what your personal life story is, what is moderation and what is good, what is bad for you. It doesn't mean that there isn't a truth for you. What makes this really, really difficult is that what is right for you personally, your brain wants to lie to you and take the easier path, not the right path. So your brain is working against you. Your awareness is working against you. Your conscious is working against you. And so here's my advice. If, for example, if you are the type of guy, like something as simple as caffeine, if you cannot work without caffeine every single day, I think it's a good thought experiment and if you're like, I cannot work without caffeine, I have to have my cup of coffee, which is a very moderate substance, especially used moderately, if it doesn't affect your sleep, right? I challenge you to sincerely, not half-assedly, right? But to sincerely try to go a week without any caffeine, especially if you've had caffeine every single day for like years, I challenge you to go without it for a week and sincerely try to do your best at it. And then at the end of the week, if you're like, no, I actually like it because I sincerely gave it a try and I found that it does help. It's good for me. It's fine. I can use it moderately. That's fine. Because it shows that you can take a break sincerely. Also, you sincerely tried and you're like, oh, actually it does help, right? But you have to try sincerely and you have to take a break. And that goes for anything. Like if you think alcohol isn't a big deal for you, but you're willing to give it a try, you practice impulse control for a week or two, right? Even up to a month if you want to. And you try to find what is better about it because your brain is going to be telling you this is worse, and here's why. Confirmation bias, confirmation bias, confirmation bias. But you have to fight against all that and try. And then at the end of that abstinence period, then be like, okay, this is something that I can moderate that doesn't really affect it or whatever. Right? And then you can come up with your own personal decisions. I'm very fearful of doing like hyper-generalized, especially because I'm not a doctor. I don't know you. So take all this with a grain of salt. There is something wrong if you are completely unwilling or worse, unable to take a break for a week or a month. This is beyond mixing. This is just impulse control and a contribution to society, a responsible member of a community, right? This is, it goes beyond mixing. Okay, so there are a couple exceptions. I'm not really going to drop names. I'm going to try to avoid that. Maybe it can be appropriate, but I'm going to avoid that. I would go as far as to say, so let's start the threshold, Lou, at engineers, mixers, and engineers that at the bottom of the list is the threshold is are fully full-time working, can support a family up to top 10 engineers in the world, right? Mm-hmm. So the threshold is supporting a family, working full-time and up, right? Mm-hmm. I would damn near say that near 90% of those engineers are sober while working.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, more than that. And yeah. I would even say that the further you go down into people that can't go full time, that are incapable of doing it, that are trying it but never seem to be able to succeed in any way, the further down the list you go, the more drugs and alcohol you see.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because a lot of the people that you would assume are more down a party, the higher you go, the less they do during times of work. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong with lighting up in 90% of the circles you're in. Some, depending on the gig you take on, there might be a clause that you agree to, like, just saying like, hey, there is no alcohol or substance use during our work, this and that. And that's like a thing, like for this specific person, we try to keep it away. They had a problem with it in the past. They're not comfortable with it. So we have it nowhere in sight when working with them. Totally cool. Usually not the case, but you know, there's people who have had issues with it in the past and they would prefer if you also abstained from having anything of that nature around them while they're with you. Some people like to bring their kids to the studio. You definitely don't want to be doing that around their kids. With that said, there's a lot of people who do enjoy that no matter what level you're at, but they're a lot more responsible with it the higher you go.
Yeah. Here's the thing about what we're saying right now. This is totally, totally biased based on our perception. So this is not like an objective samples, large sample size and a random surveys, right? So this is just how we perceive it. So take this with a grain of salt and understand it for what it is. There's two exceptions that are very, very open about this that come to mind. We already talked about Greasy Will, who loves to drink and genuinely is like, I work better if I am drunk, right?
Yeah.
And he's just, obviously, he's an exception. Like he... Like, if you've ever seen his TikTok, he's super good at his work. He is hyper creative, very reliable engineer. I think that he's just an exception of a person to begin with, right? Like, and then the second exception that I would specific to this topic is Tizio, who's very open about how often he smokes and how much he smokes. He brags about it, if anything. And again, No moral, no judgment on morality here. And he's obviously doing really great records, way bigger records. His records sound incredible, like objectively incredible. Oh. He's been awarded accordingly for it and has incredible clients. He's able to get jobs done if he, under the influence, like if he wasn't able to do that, he wouldn't be able to be where he's at now, right? So I think he's an exception. Every other engineer that you'd see at NAMM, like most of them do like weed or alcohol or something like that. But that's just like someone that works for Apple during the day as a coder likes weed at night and alcohol in the day. You know, it's like equivalent to that. It's especially among engineers, right? Which is different from artists. Among producers, I would even extend it to producers. A little bit less with producers, but still within among producers, like the higher up you go, the more consistently you'll see sobriety. Here's the thing. I don't think alcohol and drugs is symbolic of anything besides impulse control. It's not about the drugs. It's not about the alcohol. It's about that people that are very highly professional and work at a high level of professionalism have high levels of impulse control. So an ability to moderate or remove drugs and alcohol from your life indicates a high level of impulse control and self-control, which is absolutely needed at higher levels of the music industry. Is that a fair assessment, Lou?
I think so.
Where would you disagree? Because it sounds like you're thinking of some nuance.
So I don't want to come off as like pro drug or anything, right? Because I think anybody that knows me knows well that I'm not that, but I am a do whatever you want to do, just don't fuck it up kind of guy. And maybe the best way I can explain this is to explain like my personal hiring process for anything that I pay money for. I don't give a fuck how you do it. Do it right. Do it once. I don't want to have to repeat this shit. If I pay you to fix my pipes, I don't want a second leak. So if you're going to have a drink while you do it, you better not fuck this shit up. Because I will, you know, do what I have to do to make sure that the damages are taken care of. If I hire you to mix an album and there's a deadline and you don't turn it in for deadline and you just say, well, the artist kept coming over and he was high the whole time, that's a great finger point in the moment sometimes, right? But if it's you partaking with them the whole time, it doesn't bode well for you. It doesn't matter if the artist is doing it. The responsibility is on your shoulders. So if it helps you, that's for you to decide. But your clients are aware of it at that point. And right. If they don't agree with you, it doesn't matter what you think. Your efficiency, your output is everything. So if you want to mix while high once in a while, go ahead. Go ahead. I mean, realistically, after listening to this, DK has read out the damages that you are willingly taking the risk of. But it's on you now. You can't say that you didn't know going in. You know, if you have a risk of hearing loss by swimming in a pool and you don't wear the little earplugs, then that's on you. Once again, as long as you knew what your decision was and you go forth with it, you can't say that weed made the song sound better if the song never comes fucking out. You know what I mean? Like, I have a lot of patience for anyone that asks for help. I have very little patience for people I pay. So with that said, I don't really care if you smoke or drink on the job. I care about your efficiency and if you're going to put me at risk of anything. And if I feel like you smoking or drinking while on the job is putting me at risk, even if we haven't even gotten halfway through it, I might speak up and say, hey, can you put that down? Because right. I've watched too many people lose their career to it. And that's the reality. You could say that you're, I'm not going to name names, but I'm going to give a real world example of something that happened within the last year to somebody. One, I had to see how management responded, how the person who hired said person had to now be in the middle of an issue, and it made them look bad, though their relationship was good and solid and they've always been a one with everything that they do, that they essentially got a pass, but now it was on their shoulders to fix an issue that they did not directly cause, but the person that they hired could not see how drugs and alcohol would affect the work in front of them and affect the people around them. They thought they were doing okay. The whole time, they were being lined up to be brutally fired. But we had a
That's
show.
That's kind of how addiction works too. Like genuinely your conscious brain cannot comprehend that
fucking up.
Like, yeah, you cannot tell. Like you literally, anybody that's addicted be like, I can quit any day. And they genuinely believe it.
Yeah. Right. So this example has, once again, I'm not naming names. I'm not going to name artists either because I think it'd be easy to figure out from there. Yes, I did have to work with this person, but we didn't work together long. So the big names that they were working with are not people that I directly work with. So don't try to piece it to people I work with. It's just something I've had to deal with. But we were doing a show and we were doing two shows in one weekend. And we had to like go around and stuff, right? First show, we got a sound check. Dude has a drink in his hand during sound check. Typically, a drink in your hand isn't the craziest thing. But sound check was at 2 p.m. You don't need a glass of whiskey. Straight. It wasn't even a cocktail. It wasn't like a Jack and Coke and shit. It was just straight up like maybe 3-4 ounces. That's like 3-4 shots of whiskey. And if you know about alcohol, whiskey is pretty heavy, my guy. I love whiskey. I'm a whiskey guy myself. That's not moderation. That's not sound check consumption. That's not remove the jitters. That's let me feel a buzz. Management instantly took notice and said, hey, to the guy that hired him, tell you got to cut it down. He thought once the guy was told to cut it down, he thought it'd be a good idea to go to management and say, oh, well, when I'm working with so-and-so, which is his usual normal person he works with, he's like, we're all drinking. Like, it's fine, dude. Like, I got this. And he's like, no, cut it out. Like, I don't care what the fuck you do with the other person. That's not what you do with me. So once again, consumption thinking that you're okay, that you're in control, but you're not the one that's making the decisions. You're not the one writing your own check. And if you're writing your own check, you're a CEO. What the fuck are you doing on the go? You should be in your office hiring other people to do your shit so you can go drink some more. But this guy was already given warning. He was given a heads up. He was told where he's at. Doesn't matter if he's a big roller or not. Like, dude, you've officially been communicated that you're fucking up. Once again, the next day, we got a sound check. Oh, no. Hold on. Let's not even get to the next day. During the show, he decides to have more drinks to the point where he has a drink on stage with him. Totally normal to have a drink on stage with you. Totally not normal to be drunk on stage where you're not even facing the right direction. And it's on video. We have video of it. And it became the most iconic thing that we bring up to people when they're hired now. Because instead of being in control, you became a fucking meme.
That's funny.
You became a cautionary tale. So once again, The dude had a blast. It looked like he was enjoying himself, except his back was towards this audience. You're a musician. You don't, like, you get one of the funnest jobs in the world. I'm going to lay this one out for everybody to understand. This is a job you get to do, not have to do. Stop fucking up. Listen, man, like, choose your risk, choose your battles. But when you fuck up like that, you're a fucking moron in my eyes. I don't care how successful you are. I don't care what chain you have, what car you drive, who sponsored you. In fact, I question the people that sponsored you. Have they ever seen you on stage? You're not even facing the audience. So once again, drugs and alcohol, do it your own risk. You understand what the problems of it can be. if you choose to partake in it just for the experience, just to try it out, sure, try to be conscious about it. If you've never done something before and you're looking to try it, go to somebody who has that will Sherpa you and that you trust, you feel safe with. Me and DK had done that for like our own things, like where if we didn't know something, we talk to somebody first. We don't just jump into shit. You know what I mean? That could be career advice. That could be financial advice. That could be marriage advice. You talk to somebody before you just do this wild thing you've never done before. But don't let it be the reason that you lose your career. You're a fucking idiot if you let it to.
Okay, so I have four thoughts. I'm going to try to remember them all. I almost guarantee I'm going to forget one. Number one, the industry is the music business in whole, in all its facets, is a lot more professional than it comes off, than it seems. It's a lot more conscientious than it seems. In fact, the second point that I'm going to make is, and I've talked about this on different episodes, is that the the high value asset in the music industry from all positions is not creativity. It's not the ability to write or come up with something new. That is part of it, but it's mostly conscientiousness. The ability to be professional, to hit deadlines, to stay on task, to follow a schedule, to be able to do what the label says, managers say, to go on tour and to not cancel any shows because you were drunk and you're now hungover and can't do a show, right? It's a lot more professional than people think at high levels, at the higher levels. It's a lot more conscientious than people think. And the last two points that I have is going back to Lou's point. Now that you know the risks, doesn't mean that you're going to fall into those traps and you're going to lose yourself and lose your career. It doesn't mean that. In fact, that's the problem with talking about this stuff is that your the addictive brain wants to tell you that you're going to be fine. Your brain is fighting against you. So I'm going to flip the question around, which is instead of saying, how close can I get? Again, with that car analogy on the cliff,
instead of Icarus.
How good of a driver am I is not based on how close to the edge I can get. A good driver says, I don't know how close I can get. I know I'm going to stay as far away from it as I can. Right?
Yes.
That's the point. It's not about how good or close you can get to the edge. It's about how far away you can get from it. And if this is something that you don't know, right? Even if you don't know how close you can get, then stay away. Like, this is just one of those things. It's not about morality. It's not being holier than thou. This is about, I think, like, people think that they should be able to work at a professional level and like the drugs that while they're high, they're like, I can still work. But let me calm down a bit. I'm an adult. I can calm down.
You can breathe.
Most people that smoke weed in recording sessions genuinely believe that they're being productive when they're smoking weed. As the sober guy in the room that has seen so many sessions with so many different artists, with so many different producers, and a lot of them smoking weed, I guarantee you not a single one of them is as productive as they think they are when they're high. Okay? Okay, and the last point is, and this is like a dumb point, but I'm going to say it anyway. If this motivates you to be sober, then do it. I don't see people that drink or smoke or do drugs count the number of days that they've continued that addiction or continued that thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's only the people that have gone completely sober that count the days that are very proud of it, that genuinely speak on how much it's helped them, right? So if that doesn't show you how good it can be, how important it can be, and more importantly, if you've never tried, if you're sitting here being like, this is a stupid episode, no, that doesn't matter at all, then you are definitely the type of person that most should try. And I'm not saying quit it completely. I'm saying you probably genuinely don't know what it's like to not do it. And I'm going to go as far and to overgeneralize as far as that may be one of the things, and not just the drinking and the drugs. I'm talking about the personality that it takes to not be able to stop, like the lack of impulse control is likely keeping you from a higher level of professionalism in your career.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Impulse control could be the derailment of many things, not just drugs and things like that. I like to buy things. So I know that one of the things that I have to constantly remind myself is I don't need it.
Right.
That's just an impulse.
And that's a good human coping mechanism.
Right. And it's uncomfortable to like not buy things. Like it's normal to want to buy things.
Yeah.
But it's also a normal human experience among professional self-impulse controlling adults. They don't mm-hmm. remove the desire. Like people assume, especially people with very low self-impulse control, sometimes think that it's like, oh, look at these people that have way more self-control. Like they don't have the desire to do drugs. Oh, they don't have the desire to go shopping.
That desire is still there.
That's not true. Everybody has the desire. It's not doing it in the face of it.
Yeah.
That's the point. So don't be fooled into thinking that some people are built different. No, they're like, this is like, if we all eat hot sauce, it's spicy to everybody. It's the same level of spice, objectively the same level of spice to everybody. And then some people are used to it, are willing to fight through the pain and enjoy it, right? Maybe that's a bad analogy, but that's the point. It's still spicy.
Some people just
to
have a higher tolerance towards it. Some people avoid it like the plague.
Right, but it's still spicy.
Yeah, still spicy.
Right. Okay, I really need to pee, so we need to cut this. Hold on. You say what you need to say because I'm going to pee real fast.
Okay.
But then we'll end the episode. I don't have an ability to pause this episode for some reason. So you say what you need to say for a minute.
Sure. So let's see if I can remember properly because it's kind of funny that it ran out. But, you know, we were talking about like it is down to impulse control. I think for a lot of people that want to try this, if you haven't already, you don't really need to. But with that said, I'm a big believer in like, you should experience life. Life is, you know, precious. You don't want it to go downhill. So I wouldn't say like try heroin or anything extremely addictive. Don't go down that stupid ass rabbit hole. But if you want to try it, once again, talk to a friend who you think you'd be safe with and things of that nature and just kind of experience it. But I will say that I don't know anyone who would say that smoking or doing anything was the reason they succeeded, because a lot more times, the higher you go, a lot of people let that go. And at a certain point, it's also part of growing up. You know, like some people have gone through things in life and so this becomes kind of a crutch and they kind of normalize it. But I've met people who are one personality when high and a whole other personality when not. And when they let it go, they tend to actually calibrate a lot easier than when they were high to new changes in their life. If you want this to be a career, you shouldn't be looking at this as what is going to help you. Reason being is that if it was ever going to help you, if there was ever such a thing as a drug that would somehow enhance your hearing to being able to decipher different bits of the spectrum a little more efficiently than before, then they would have fucking sold it already. They would have sold magic hearing weed. Magic hearing cocaine. And you know what? Everybody on the industry would be on it. That's like, what is that movie where you take a pill and suddenly you get full access to your brain? What was that movie?
Limitless.
Which one was it? Limitless.
Limitless.
There is no limitless weed, okay? There's no limitless cocaine. There's no limitless heroin. If you really thought that this was the solution as an engineer, I mean, hey, that's on you. Like I said, everybody's body is different. People have different tolerances. I'm not one of those people. But with that said, I would be willing to bet that the far, far majority of people who are successful in this recognize that they are also in the extreme minority of people who can actually maintain a career while doing this. This is one of the few industries where this is kind of a normal habit or a perceived normal habit. But once again, as we said earlier, the higher you go, the less that's the case. It's way more efficient, a lot more detail oriented. And to give you the perfect example to wrap this all up, the higher you go, the more they realize they're dealing with creatives who are not very efficient. So anything that makes you look less efficient makes you look less hireable unless you come with a track record already. So if you were at, I'm not going to say the bottom of the career list or tier list or anything, because that's not what we're doing, right? There's plenty of artists I've never fucking heard of that have a Grammy. There's plenty of artists that have multiple platinum plaques that I've never fucking heard of. So there's a career for everybody out here. But the higher you go with labels, the more they expect you to be efficient. And the more often you are drunk or high when they talk to you, the less it feels like that. So if you want to see yourself succeed, do not look at this as something that will enhance it. Because if it was to enhance it, they would have sold it.
Yeah.
Don't be an idiot. If there's no product for it because it doesn't, because it actually helps, that's because it doesn't fucking help. But, yeah. You know, once again, Korn, Louis Armstrong, Muse, Oasis, and all of them, they all credit drugs to not anything related to the spectrum, but rather their openness to new ideas, their creativity, their little pool pocket for new riffs and shit. But it's never been associated with making you hear better. It just made you feel a little more creative. And that's again, just the nature of being high. You feel creative when playing a fucking video game.
And then that's funny too, because like creativity is also so subjective. And again, is America objectively more creative than the creative endeavors of Japan? Technically, Japan has only a third of the population of America. And if Japan is still competing at the creative level of America with a third of the population, they would have to be three times more creative in order to do that.
So I forgot who it was.
Japan. I mean, here's the point. The point is like, as long as Japan exists, the argument of it helps me be more creative is more of an evidence of your self-belief to superstition and rituals than it is to the actual cognitive benefit of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
So, I don't know. This one's just a fun little note. So, Takeshi Shudo, the creator, one of the early on creators of Pokemon, he was a head writer for the series. He was actually, he goes on story saying how Lugia was created under like a massive trip, and that like it was not that he like drew it out. He just had a crazy ass dream. When he woke up and was sober, he then put it to paper. So I'm just saying, like, even in Pokemon, we see it in creative animations and things like that. But he was sober when he put it to paper. He was high when he thought of it. I don't know many people that are picking up a piece of paper and actually writing it down when they're high. Maybe Seth Rogen, but there's very, very few people who are efficient when they're high. It's usually when they sober up, they actually put something to action and make something of it.
Right. And that's dangerous too, because imagine you actually get high once. Let's say you take acid once, you drop acid once, and you write the best song ever. That's almost more dangerous than continuing to fail, because now you genuinely think that you can't be creative without it. And that's worse. That's honestly worse.
What is it? Falling into the trap of believing that you are the rule, not the exception.
So, anyway, that's all most of my thoughts. There's a few more thoughts that we'll step away from. This is not a debate on morality, whether it is okay, whether this is not a holier than thou debate, right? It is not that better people do less. It's a conversation and debate and argument on the industry, how to climb the corporate ladder within the world, how to climb the career ladder within this world and within this industry, the false perceptions of this industry, as well as ideas on personal philosophy, self-control, and for the purpose of bettering yourself to become a better engineer, to become more reliable, to become someone that people are more likely to hire, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying stop all this stuff and sober is better because it is more moral. I'm saying it would literally make you a better engineer and become a more reliable person so you would get hired more and hopefully make more money in your lifetime.
Yeah.
It's completely logical and practical. I do think that like, Like, even the most chaotic looking like artists that seem like they're constantly on drugs and alcohol, I almost guarantee it, behind the curtain are some of the most conscientious, intelligent, sober people you've ever met.
Yeah.
They put on, listen, this industry is filled with jesters, people that clown themselves and put on a perception because it sells, but behind the curtain are eerily intelligent and eerily conscientious and eerily, how do you say, intentional with their work.
And look at a lot of comedians. Like, yeah, they might make a lot of jokes, and a lot of times they're kind of like what feel like to be really stupid jokes. But you got comedians out there like Dave Chappelle, who's revered as like intelligent, very well-structured stage presence and everything, even when it feels loose. But then you got the guy from Lonely Island, who actually is a really, really smart and cool dude. But then he also, just like you said, it's kind of just a gimmick. He's just putting on the jester's outfit for the episode, but he knows what he's doing. He's decisive about it, and it's working on a really high level. You can't put on productions of that size without some set of efficiency in place, whether right. that's organizing a team, deciding who you work with and all that to keep you on course and all that. But it takes an entire team to get things at that level. And a lot of times when they're choosing their team, they're looking for highly efficient people.
Right. It's that simple. It's very practical.
Mm-hmm.
You know what decisions you need to make. And I'm not here to tell you what those decisions are. You know. So make those decisions. And this goes into other things too. Like, not just things that you don't do, but things that you should be doing. Like, I think like jealousy and frustration and insecurities are great compasses for the soul. Like literally, like if you're insecure about something that is within control, right? Like, I mean, there's also times where it's just unrelated. But if you're jealous of someone, that's like a really good compass for what you actually want, right? And I think like some people don't really know what they want. So like focus on what you get jealous of, right? Or like, if you are really insecure about your body weight, then maybe you should do something about it.
Yeah.
It's not even about whether having lots or little body weight is actually good or bad. That's subjective. But if you feel bad about it, then it is a personal issue. Right?
Yeah.
There are many, many, many people that love to do something bad and they genuinely, like Gary Vee loves to swear, and he's hyper successful. Does that mean everybody should swear more often? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not an objective truth. And I'm not even saying that he's bad for doing it. What I'm saying that he doesn't feel bad for doing it, so it doesn't affect his work. If you feel bad for doing something, it will inevitably affect your work, regardless of whether or not it is objectively good or bad. Yeah. Does that make sense? So don't do this. Don't do that. Like, take advantage of your subconscious. Build some awareness. Be better. And we're here for you, and we're here to help you do that. Okay, I think that was like a pretty good episode. I think beyond alcohol and drugs, just the general vibe of the industry as well. Okay, Lou, any other last notes?
No, just good to be back into the new year. Very excited for what's going on. I'm glad with the way certain things are moving already. I'm just, I'm excited for this. So if you're excited to try new things, just be aware of yourself, keep it safe, and let your year start off right.
Yep. And on that note, if you want more technical specific episodes on mixing and mastering, or even some production, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Sign up for our Patreon. I think it's only $4 a month right now. Only $4 a month for almost 300 current episodes, plus a new episode every single week. It's great. Only technical information. How to dial in a compressor. EQ, imagers, loudness.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Fantastic episodes if that's your vibe. We gatekeep those behind a paywall. $4 a month. Less than a cup of coffee.
Gatekeeper.
just knowledge, insane knowledge, right? Okay. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. You already love the Mixing Music Podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today.